minds aglow with whirling, transient nodes of thought, careening through a cosmic vapor of invention.
Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. I'm speaking today with Jack Cole and with Mary Barr, and I'd like you both to tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Hi, I'm a former New Jersey state trooper, and I retired some time ago. I'm now getting a PhD in public policy at UMass Boston, and the reason I'm here is because I am against the war on drugs and wish to end it and end prohibition.
Hi, my name is Mary Barr. I am currently executive director of Connections, which you can find at transitional.org. And I am a former prisoner, and I am also against prohibition because I know that prison is not the answer.
Let's start with you, Mary. What were you imprisoned for?
Almost entirely for drugs, for small possession, and for related, mostly loitering, homelessness.
How old were you at the time?
33.
And what was your situation in life? You were unemployed?
Yes. Not everyone that uses drugs has my story. 15% of people, according to statistics, that try drugs become addicted. So that means that 85% of the people that try them just use them. So there's a big difference between use and abuse, but not in the way we treat the people. Mm-hmm. You know? But either way, whether you use or you abuse drugs, jail is not the answer.
Mm-hmm. Did you consider yourself an addict at the time, or do you consider yourself retrospectively have been addicted to drugs?
Yes. But I never considered myself a criminal, and I never hurt another living being. And I myself was hurt quite often. And I believe the system helped propagate my addiction because they never helped me. They only added injury to my injuries. And, you know, if we had about 3 hours, I could maybe explain to you how I became addicted or other people's addictions. But basically, the main contributing factors tend to be lack of education, low self-esteem, abuse as a child, sexual, physical abuse. These are characteristics that most addicts, not all, but most addicts share in common. So we're not addressing those issues of the person. We're actually making them feel worse about themselves. And, again, we're cutting them off from the options that actually have been shown to be deterrents to crime and drug use, excuse me, which are education, jobs, et cetera, and family. And we keep saying we want to keep the family values and families together, but we incarcerate people and we separate them from their family. And 50% of people who are incarcerated, their children become incarcerated in the future. And 50% of the children we send to foster care become incarcerated or addicted. So what does that tell you about, well, foster care, but also about separating the needs of the parent from the needs of the children?
Did you have kids at the time?
Yes.
What happened to your kids?
When I went looking for help, the social services took them from me instead of helping us. I'm not condoning what they did or what I did either. However, they don't have very many family residential treatment centers. And that's one of the things that I advocate, that instead of putting these billions of dollars into prisons that do absolutely no good for anybody, to start building family residential treatment centers for those that need them. You know, I'm not talking about people that smoke marijuana once in a while. I mean, people that actually need treatment have a lot of issues, and this is a place where they can address those issues. Prison just, you know, it adds to the issues.
Were you using heroin?
Crack.
Crack. So one of the arguments that people make for criminalization is that the mandatory detoxification that is supposedly occurs when people are put in jail or put in some kind of mandatory treatment as a part of their sentencing is beneficial to the people who were arrested. What do you think about that?
I guess you could have to be there when you watch people go through, especially heroin addicts, and just watching them go through a detox with no aspirin, no bed, because when people just don't understand that it's 5 days from the time you're arrested to the time you get a bed in jail, it's 5 days. So you're on the floor for 5 days. So, and you're sick, and there's one toilet, and there's 40 to 60 of you in one big cell. So, you know, aside from the fact that it's very inhumane to put someone through a detox in this under these conditions, it's inhumane for everybody in the cell because we have to watch it. We're subject to hepatitis C from feces and from the toilets. And, you know, also, what if somebody has HIV? One of the big things about that is they get pneumonia. Very easily. It's a very dangerous thing for them. And we're putting them on these ice-cold floors, and it's like a meat locker. You never think you'll be warm again. You know, you never think you'll be warm again. Mm-hmm. And even if you've never seen the person next to you in your life, you're hugging each other. You're huddling together for warmth. And even if that person smells really bad, you don't care. You're just freezing.
So what's your mission now? Are you part of the network of folks who are doing solidarity with folks who are in jail with the families?
Yes, that's part of my work. It's a huge job because besides the over 2 million people we have in prisons, we don't count local facilities. And I don't know exactly how many millions we have incarcerated every year, but it's more than 2 million. So they all have a record. And it's tough to get a job. It's tough to get back into the swing of things. You know, we really need to change the way we treat drugs in general, addiction or just use of drugs, whatever. It's not drugs that are causing the problems anymore. It's really making them illegal. For instance, we were talking earlier about marijuana. And really, marijuana is a weed that if it was growing in our garden, we'd come up with some pesticide to kill it, you know. But because it's illegal, it's worth a lot of money, and we'd harvest it instead. So.
Jack, you used to put folks in jail. Tell us, what was your daily life when you were an undercover cop?
My daily life. When I worked undercover, I used to think of myself as a chameleon, you know, those little lizards that you'd buy at the circus, and we'd put them on our shirt, and they'd turn the color of whatever shirt you were wearing. Well, I used to believe I was a chameleon, and when I was targeted against an individual, I did everything but change the color of my skin in order to fit in, because my job was to become each individual's closest friend, their best confidant, most reliable person, so that I could betray them and send them to jail. And my job was to do that over and over again. They're never kingpins. The kingpins don't get targeted. They're so insulated that you can't target them. And there's so much money in drugs because of the prohibition. Only because of the prohibition. Because if you made it legal, it's just weeds you're talking about, as Mary said. But when it's illegal, there's over $400 billion a year spent on to buy drugs. When you're talking about that kind of money, the people at the top, there's no way in the world we're going to touch the people at the top. The best we could do is get some people way, way, way down the line. In the New Jersey State Police, one of our problems was we could never afford to buy the amount of drugs that you'd need to purchase in order to get to the big people, because you'd be needing to buy hundreds of thousands, maybe $1 million worth of drugs in order to get up to these major, major people. And you just can't afford to let money like that walk, you know. So we would have what's called buy bus, where you'd maybe set up a deal for $50,000 or something, and then you couldn't let that money walk either. So when the people came out with the drugs, you'd have to arrest them on the spot. So you got that level of a dealer, but you didn't get the people that were dealing to them.
When did you start to have qualms? You're enrolled in a graduate program now. Was it after you went back to school that you started to think about this in a more systematic way? Or?
No. I started the war on drugs when the war on drugs started. 1968, the war on drugs was started by Richard Milhouse Nixon, who needed some subject that he could inflame people's minds and get them to vote for him. So he pretty much invented the war on drugs. I think it was a group of lies from the very start. The statistics were all inflated to show that we had a problem that we really didn't have. And by 1970, he was in office, and he got Congress to come out with a lot of federal grants to help any police department that would fight the war on drugs. Now, in the New Jersey State Police, we had seven people in the Narcotic Bureau, seven people for the whole state, and that's all we'd had for years and years and years. When the federal grants hit, in one day, we changed from 7 to 76 people in the Narcotic Bureau, and I was one of those 76. I spent a quarter of my life as an undercover agent, mostly, in the Narcotic Bureau, and that's about half of the war on drugs, which has lasted for three decades, over 30 years now, and over a half a trillion dollars has been spent on this war on drugs.
Given the period, wasn't there a political motivation behind the kinds of people and the direction that that task force, those kinds of task force would have been directed to, the youth culture, the black inner city areas? I mean, it wasn't going after white folks, right? Rich white folks.
No, certainly it wasn't. Nixon, according to Haldeman, H.R. Haldeman, his chief of staff, Nixon actually said, you know, the problem in this country is the blacks, and the trick is to get at the problem without making it look like you're getting at the problem. And for that, he had the war on drugs.
Absolutely.
The neighborhood I was in was Queensbridge, which is a predominantly black neighborhood. But one of the things, whether you're white or Hispanic or whatever, most of the people involved in the criminal justice system don't have any money. And so what Jack says makes sense, because one of the reasons they do target poorer people and low income is because they don't have money for a lawyer. They don't have money for bail. It's really hard to fight your case from inside jail. Mm-hmm. So these are easy people. We're targeting such easy folk that, you know, it's almost, I mean, it's seems to me that people are very lazy, can I say? Because we stopped detecting, we stopped investigating, because that stuff costs money and takes time. But it's really costing us now, the justice system is costing us so much money that we have to really look at those alternatives. Get the dangerous people. For instance, in where I'm from in New York, every eight seconds, actually, a child disappears. So we can't solve those because we're busy getting these easy folks over here. And again, we have to justify the budget. Like Jack was saying, the budget rose, so there were 76 agents all of a sudden. How do you keep that money coming in? Now you got used to that budget. You got used to that money. You have to start to make things up to get that budget going. So, for instance, I was arrested 45 times in a little over 3 years. They didn't say we arrested the same woman 45 times. They said, oh, look, we've got 45 busts in this area. So I helped them justify their budget. Not just me, and I want to really emphasize this, that everyone that I was, when they came with a van, they didn't just put me in it. The van was, you know, loaded with people till they couldn't fit anybody else in. And all those people were people I knew from the neighborhood. Basically, all of us were poor addicts. And so we justified a lot of budgets. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I'm not condoning my behavior, and I want to say I don't condone drug use. But I don't condone a system that helps propagate it and that costs so much money to do it when there are better alternatives. My last incarceration alone cost the taxpayer $65,000 because jail costs more money, supposedly because of transportation issues. Prisons are about $32,000 to $42,000, depending. But my last, when I went to treatment, it only cost the taxpayer $17,000. And within 15 months, I was in college, had a job, and had my own apartment, and had my children back in my life. And it saved my life. So why don't we build more treatment instead of prisons? And the answer now is because it's big business. Mm-hmm. It's a big business. And what would
prison industrial complex.
Oh, yeah. So let's make a rehabilitation industrial complex for people that need rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And let's decriminalize drugs for people that are casual users. I mean, how would I know if you're going to work every day and you're going to school and you're leading a productive life, what is in my business what else you're doing? Mm-hmm. If your lifestyle isn't interfering with my life and my community, why is that my business?
The prison system, it's the fastest growing industry in the United States. It's quadrupled in the last 10 years. And we seem to feel like the answer is just lock them up for longer and longer. We get more and more repressive with our laws all the time. But, you know, drugs today are easier to get. They're more potent and they're cheaper than they were when I started working this in 1970. When I started working, when I was buying heroin on the street in 1970, we were buying what were called tray bags when we were out just arresting folks like Mary on the street. And by the way, what we were doing was we were arresting users and saying that these were dealers because we were inflating our statistics because our bosses knew. They didn't know anything about how to fight a war on drugs when the war on drugs started. They just got all these big bucks from federal grants, but they knew very well how to keep the federal grants coming in. And to do that, you had to show that there was a great need. So we inflated everything that we did. We called users dealers. I mean, I have no idea how many young people's lives I ruined in those over 1,000 arrests, but I'm sure the count is very, very large. People who weren't dealing, here's the thing. In New Jersey, the law says distribution of a controlled dangerous substance. That's the law. You don't have to get money for it. All you have to do is hand it to me. For instance, if Bill Clinton, after he didn't inhale that joint that he put in his mouth, if he would have handed that joint to me instead of the next guy in line, had I been on the scene, that's a distribution of a controlled dangerous substance. Back then, you would have gone to jail for 7 years for it when he was doing it. And he would have not ever been a lawyer, much less a governor of a state or a president of the United States.
Giving someone the name of someone who they can get drugs from.
Absolutely. You were asking what changed my mind. Well, in 1973, I decided that the only way we'd do anything about addiction in this country would be to legalize drugs. And I haven't changed since then. I've grown stronger and stronger about it every year. But what really made me feel like we were destroying all these lives was one day I was working in Patterson with an informant one night, about 3 o'clock in the morning. We used to drive down the street slow with our windows rolled down in the summer, and two white guys driving through the black section of Patterson. It was obvious what we were there for. It was a stone ghetto back then. Nobody else came in except besides the black folks, except people that wanted to buy. So we'd drive down the street slow, and they'd yell, Hey, man, you looking? And you just pull over to the side and tell them what you wanted. And we didn't have much money to spend on drugs, so I'd usually order 4 tray bags because there's 2 of us there. And
$3 bags.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it costs then, $3 bags. And it would usually take 2 bags to get you off for the addicted people back then because the potency of those tray bags was only about 1.5% actual heroin. So you're talking about 2 bags to get you off, $3 a bag, that's $6, right? By 1980, with our war on drugs, that had shrunk down to where now the potency of a single bag of heroin on the street 10 years later was about 6.9%, 7%. And they only cost $3.80 a bag, average. By 2000, and this is where I'm getting these stats is from the DEA's own stats. By the year 2000, the cost of getting off had shrunk to 80 cents. Now, when you're talking about inflation, it should be certainly going the other way if it's just staying the same. But it's shrunk from $6 to 80 cents to get off. And the potency of a glassine bag that you can buy on the street was 38%.
Those damn terrorists. How are they doing that?
Well, there's another thing. Terrorists, funding terrorists. You know, the administration says if you use drugs, you're funding a terrorist. I maintain if you vote for a politician that pushes the war on drugs, you're funding a terrorist, because no terrorist would make a single penny if drugs were legal tomorrow.
I wanted to say that the police have quite a few tricks. One of the reasons I'm for legalization is, well, a few other reasons. We would, number one, get the real bad guys. You know, the police would have time to get the bad guys. We would have a lot less injustice in the system. People that need help would get it. But, like, the police do have some other tricks that, you know, I'm sure Jack would have told you, but one of the main things that I find that they're doing, especially to women, is that they'll go to somebody that they know is a user, or somebody they know doesn't have any money, who might be they know is desperate for money, because the police know the people in their community. And they'll stop and they'll offer you $20. They know you're not a drug dealer, but they know you know where to get drugs. So what you do is if you need $20 like that, hey, you'll go and you'll buy the drugs and you'll bring it back. They know you've just gone to a dealer and bought the drugs. They know you're not a drug dealer. You're just a user. But you're the one who's handing them the drugs, and they bust you for being a drug dealer. They know that the dealer's somewhere in the building you just came out of, but they don't care. And so they're setting up an awful lot of people that way. Also, if they ask you, where can I buy drugs, and you go down to that corner there, you don't have to give a name. All you have to do is point them to a corner. That corner store over there is where they hang out or whatever. You get busted for conspiracy. I mean, you know, pointing. I mean, and so these are all felonies, by the way. And if whether you deal a $3 vial of crack or an ounce of crack, it's a felony. A drug sale is a felony. So we're also adding felonies to people who aren't felonious in any way. I mean, really. And again, we're giving them, like, no options. And it's supposed to stop the killing. I mean, if we legalize drugs, people aren't going to kill each other over territory. We can, for those who are afraid of losing their jobs because we legalize drugs, get a job as a psychologist. Just learn how to be a substance abuse counselor. You know, the prison industrial complex, where if we build a prison, they will come. They will be filled around prisons we build. Then we have to have a Kmart for the women that come to visit their men so they can buy diapers. We have to build a Holiday Inn for them to sleep in, and so soon we have a city. So let's build cities around rehabs and clinics.
Our prisons are overcrowded, right? So if we got the half of the folks who are in there because the drug wore out, then we would have nice, well-adjusted prisons.
It's more than half of the folks that are in there because of the drug war. It's more than half the folks that are in there for non-violent drug offenses, let alone the violence that's involved in drug offenses. But all that stuff exists not because of drugs, but because drugs are illegal. See, that's what Mary was pointing to. If I was selling drugs on the corner, right outside here, and I've got a chance to make $1,000 a day selling my drugs on my corner, and you came and you wanted to sell your drugs on the opposite side of the corner, I can't pull out a contract and say, wait a minute, I got a contract for this.
Or a license or something.
No. I only have one option because this is illegal. My option, if I want to stop you, is to take out my gun and shoot you. You know, or if I miss because I'm a bad shot, maybe I hit Cliff or I hit Mary, who might be just walking down the street behind you. That's what's happening today. That doesn't have to happen. If drugs were made legal, none of that kind of thing would happen. We wouldn't have drive-by shootings because this gang is offended that some other gang is trying to encroach on their territory. We wouldn't have... What about overdoses? People get so worried about overdoses. Overdoses are totally something that doesn't have to happen. If drugs were legal and those drugs that people did get were controlled, had quality control, so that people knew what that potency was. I told you about the 1.5% heroin in the little glassine thing. It all looks the same. It's just a white powder. Nobody can tell what's in there. So if I was used to shooting heroin that was 6% pure in that little glassine bag, and one day I get heroin that's 38% pure, or even we've had it 68% pure in a little glassine, and I shoot that in my arm, I'm dead, instantly, dead. It's because it's what we call a hot shot. And people don't overdose because they just shoot more and more and more drugs because they want to get higher and higher. They overdose because they get something that they don't know what it is and they put it in their arm. None of that would exist if drugs were legal, you know?
The people, one of the biggest arguments I always hear against legalizing is, oh, but, you know, if we legalize it, people will use drugs. Well, hello, people are using drugs, you know. They're using them every day. And more, one of the saddest statistics I found was the highest rate of increase of heroin use last year was among 12-year-olds. I mean, does that scare the heck out of you? Of course, I'm a parent, you know. But they're using it now. It's illegal now, but they're using it anyway. So, I mean, I haven't used drugs for 6 years, and I don't know where I am right now. But if I wanted to get high, I could go out, and I bet you,
the reason you don't know where you are right now is because Cliff drove you here. It's not anything to do with your state of mind. Just want to make that clear. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I don't know the area I'm in, but I bet you within an hour I could come back with drugs, you know, because...
It would take about 2 minutes, yeah.
2 minutes? Okay. Conservative estimates, I mean, and I think this is too conservative, are that 7% of our population uses drugs. I think that's too conservative. But that's put out by the SAMHSA, by the Substance Abuse Mental Health Association. And how many people are going to admit, well, yeah, I'm using, I mean, that's illegal drugs, not legal drugs. Like, you know, there's plenty of people that are abusing, Zoloft or whatever. You know?
Let me talk about her point here from the police standpoint. When I worked undercover, I used to work in front of this bowling alley in a strip mall out in a suburban area. And it was all a bunch of young kids. These happened to be all white kids hanging around there. They were all under 21. And I could buy heroin, PCP, coke, LSD, you name it. I could buy it from those kids who were just... They were distributing them among their friends that were in this group, and I insinuated myself in the group. I became their friend, and I could buy this stuff from them. But, you know, they would say to me, hey, Jack, how about going in that liquor store and buy us a six-pack of beer? We'd like to get some beer. We can't get any beer. They could sell me heroin and PCP, but they couldn't buy beer. And I'd tell them, are you kidding me? You know, just because I'm the older guy around here, you want me to bring down the cops on top of me for giving you beer? Mm-hmm. You know, so, and they understood that. But they had a hard time getting alcohol. Why? Because it's legal and it's controlled. And is it easier to control keeping drugs away from children when the children are all we have to worry about? Or is it easier to try to keep them away from everybody? I'd say it's easier to try and keep them away just from the children.
I'm going to have to bring it to a close, but I've been speaking with Jack Cole and Mary Barr. They're here for a conference at Wesleyan University on drug policy reform. And so I really appreciate your coming to talk to me.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting us.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the A Infos Radio Project. Also at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize. And I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.